child, one descendant of
Abraham. I'd like to begin by dedicating this year as well to the memory of someone very dear to me that just passed away. His body is being brought to Israel as we speak for burial. Official David Ben Alexander Ziskin, Frank Medjuk of Halifax. As you know, I was the rabbi there for a few years, and the head of the search committee was Frank Medjuk, which is this gentleman. So the reason I am a rabbi is because of him. He gave me my first rabbinic position, and ultimately I owe him a great debt of gratitude for so many things that I won't share with you, because you didn't know the man, and this is not the right forum, and I'm still going through many memories in my mind. But suffice it to say that it's a hard day for me, a very hard day for me. And I want to just pay tribute to one aspect of his life that I believe is important for us. Because I don't like to talk to people about what's important to me, because I think that bores you. What's important to me is not necessarily what's important to you. So if I like the Yankees, that's my business. But if you come from Baltimore, Bruce, you like a different team. So quite frankly, that's not something I would share. I'd like to share something with you that I think is very, very germane. And you may not like what you're about to hear, but I believe it's true. And as usual, because this is a practical halacha course, I'd like to start by quoting a halacha to you that we're going to fulfill, God willing, next Wednesday night. When bringing the laws of reading the Megillah in chapter Tuf Reish Tzadik, anyone want to translate? Tuf Reish Tzadik, 690. You have a different alphabet than me, huh? Tuf Reish Tzadik, Seif Yud Zayin. The Ramah brings an interesting minhag, a custom. B'yesh shekatfu, and some have written, shenohagim lomar arba'a pesukim shel ge'ula bekol ram. That you say the four verses of Geula, of redemption, out loud when you read the Megillah. In other words, it's not that the reader reads the entire Megillah and that's it, but rather we read four psukim with him, or to be more precise, says the Ramah, before him. And what are the psukim? Ish Yehudi Ayah B'Shushan Abirah, there was a Jewish man in Shushan. U'Mordechai Yatza Milifnei HaMelech, and Mordechai went out before the king. You remember the continuation of that posak? Belevush Malchut Chelet Vachor, he went out with the royal clothing that was customary to wear in Shushan. La Yudim Aita Ora V'Simcha V'Yikar. How come you know that posak so well?
Havdolah.
And finally, the last pasuk of the Megillah, Ki Mordechai Yehudim Mishnei LaMelech HaChashverosh. Mordechai was the assistant to HaChashverosh, and he was very big by the Jews, and most of the people liked him. Right? Those are the four psukim that we say out loud, and then the Chazan says the Ramah, goes ahead and repeats them so that it's written and it's said, Mitoch HaKtav, from the Megillah itself. Why do we read those four psukim? Says the Ramah, that we read Arba Psukim Shel Geula, four psukim of redemption. These are the four psukim of redemption. Now let's just think about the four psukim. The first pasuk is, there was a Jew in Shushan. His name was Mordechai. Well, that's pretty good. The Jews are about to get annihilated, and there was a Jew in Shushan who didn't forget his Judaism, and he saved them. So that's definitely in the Geula category, correct? Very good. Anyone want to explain to me how Mordechai Yatzami Lifnei HaMelech talks about redemption? And Mordechai wore his royal gowns, as was customary by the Persian Empire, and walked out before the king, and everyone was happy. What does that have to do with Geula?
Shows his stripes and power?
Could be.
They're what?
But questionable. Third one, La Yudim Ta'ora V'Simcha, you all know that Chazal said, Ora means Torah, and Simcha means this. That's a very Jewish pasuk. We say it at Avdolah. The last pasuk baffles me. Ki Mordechai Yehudim Yishnei L'Melech HaChashverosh. Mordechai was the assistant to HaChashverosh. V'gadol HaYehudim, he was big amongst the Jews. V'ratzui L'Rov HaChav, and most of the Jews, most of his brothers liked him. Doresh Tov La'amo.
Well, that last clause.
V'dover Shalom L'chol Zaro. What does that have to do with Geula? A few psukim before, and we read that HaChashverosh put a big tax on the people, and everything he did was written in the Persian Empire's history books. What does that have to do with us? I think to answer this question, these four psukim, in my opinion, is the story of the Jewish people to this very moment, to this very day. If we go back into the ghetto, perhaps I'll have to give a different way to live. But since we've left the ghetto, And we're living in the big world. I believe these four psukim correspond to aspects of a Jew. And I'll say it very succinctly by answering my question with a question. Where do you start reading the Megillah from? The Megillah is 10 chapters. Where do you start from?
From the 30 of Achashverosh.
Chapter 1. There's a big machlokas in the Gemara. Where do you start from? Do you start from chapter 3? Because that's where Haman starts his big thing. Or do you start from chapter 1? Or do you start somewhere else? Maybe from chapter 6, because that's where the good stuff happens. All the good news. What's the machlokas? In my humble opinion, the machlokas in that Gemara can be summed up in one word. Do we want to talk about the Jewish stuff only? Or do we want to talk about the fact that the Jews were living within a context of a non-Jewish society that they had to acclimate to and find a way to succeed to live as Jews in that society? If you want to go with the first approach, that doesn't make a difference where we live. We can live here, or we can live in Williamsburg, or we can live in Satmar, or we can live in Gore, or we can live in any of the places and we're going to act the same and talk the same and nothing's going to change. I would say, chapter Vav, that's the story of the Jewish people, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks out for us. You don't have to know anything else. But if you start from chapter 1, and that's the way we paskin, what do you read in chapter 1? Is there any Jewish element in chapter 1? Chapter 1 of the Megillah talks about Achashverosh having a party, killing his wife, making up this. It affects the Jews, obviously. Chapter 2 also talks about the fact that he wants a new wife. All the women came. Amongst them was a Jewish woman named Esther, but yet she has a non-Jewish name. In one word, as the Rav said so many times, Rav Soloveitchik said so many times, a Jew is exactly like Avraham Avinu introduced himself to the B'nai Chait when he bought Chevron. What did he say to them? Did he say, I'm a Jew? Did he say, I'm one of you? No, he didn't. What did he say? Ger v'toshav anochi machem. I will translate. I am a dweller, a resident, and a visitor amongst you. I live here and I visit here. What does that mean? On the one hand, I live here, I pay taxes, I have a house, I'm part of the society you live in. I am pretty sure Avraham Avinu wore the same clothing that everyone wore in that society in which he lived in Israel then. But on the other hand, he's a visitor because he believes in one God, in monotheism. He got the mitzvah of Bris Milah. He had to take his son to the Akedah. He lives differently because he has a different lifestyle than them. And that is so true today as well. On the one hand, wherever countries you all come from, we're like everyone else. What, my English is different from a non-Jewish English? It's the same English. The way I dress is different from the way a non-Jew dresses. This is the latest fashions. I bought it in the same store non-Jews buy it from. But on the other hand, we have a Shabbos and a Kashrus and a Taharat HaMishpacha, and we have brachos we say before we eat and brachos that we say after we eat, and that is different from the rest of the world. And in my humble opinion, when we read the Megillah, that's exactly what we're trying to bring out. On the one hand, we read the very Jewish psukim, 2 out of 4, out loud, so everyone to hear it twice. What are the Jewish psukim? Ish Yehudi haya b'Shushan HaBirah. He was a Jew. So you have Achashverosh and the whole empire and the way they're living, and all of a sudden you got a Jewish boy who's different. He's known to be different. He's so known to be different that Haman, when he walks out one day and sees that he will not bow down, why does he get upset? Ki higidu lo, because they told him, Ashehu Yehudi, that he's a Jew. So everyone knew he was distinct, he was different. On the other hand, we read out 2 other psukim. Not just Ish Yehudi haya b'Shushan HaBirah, La Yehudi ma'ita ora v'simcha. We read 2 more psukim. What are they? In the latest fashion. He was a Jew, but he acclimated to his society to the extent that he's wearing the same royal clothing that all the great men of the government of Achashverosh wore. And the last pasuk of the Megillah says he was a Mishneh l'Melech Achashverosh. Despite being Jewish, despite keeping Shabbos, he was a Mishneh l'Melech Achashverosh. He was an assistant to Achashverosh. We are ger v'toshav. We live as visitors and as residents. And if we dare to forget that, then we will not survive in the outside world. And in my humble opinion, if I have to depict the personality of this fine gentleman, Frank, Zichrono Livracha, I believe that he was one of the people I met that indeed was able to successfully intertwine and combine these two aspects. On the one hand, a very candid and very serious Jew, one of the Omer Shomer Shabbos families in that community, which does not always get you friends. You have to understand what it means to live in a community in which you're invited on a summer to a Saturday night party that does not start after Shabbos, and you have to decline. There's a price for that. There's a social price for that. They say you're too different, you're one of the frumies. There's a social price for that. There's a social price not to be willing to eat all the food they put in front of you, and declining this or that and just drinking a cup of water or an apple. But on the other hand, he knew exactly where he was and he acclimated to the society he was in. He knew the history of the place he lived very well, and he knew the history of the shul he was part of, and he knew how to live as a Jew on the one hand, but acclimate to the society on the other. And that's the legacy, in my opinion, of Avraham Avinu. When he does not come in front of B'nai Chet and said, I'm a Jew, I only speak Yiddish, I only speak Ladino, I don't hear any other Goyish languages. He speaks to them in their language and he says, he's a Toshav, he lives here. On the other hand, he couldn't go ahead and say, well, I'm only a Toshav. He said, I was a Jew as well. It's very difficult to combine the two. It's much, much easier to just do one. And I'll just give you a small story that happened on my recent trip. I was traveling with my wife back to Israel. And on our flight back to Israel, we had the following. There was three seats and three seats. So one seat, my wife and me, and a chassid. On the other side, there was a lovely couple from America, a religious couple, and someone else. The lady comes by first, as they are customary to do on planes after they take off, and gives you a drink and a snack. The drink you can probably drink, like all the toshavim, all the residents of this plane, but the snack is not kosher. Now, how do you react to the woman, the stewardess, on a non-Jewish airline that says to you, here, take a snack, please? What would be the way you would decline?
No, thank you.
No, thank you. So I said no, thank you. My wife said no, thank you. This couple from America said no, thank you. How did the chassid say it? He was sitting right next to me. She comes up to him and says, would you like a snack? This is his reaction, okay? What, is it kosher? She said, no, I'm sorry, it's not kosher. Of course not. Now, you know what that means? Do you understand the depth of what I just said? When you're living in a different society, you say, no, thank you. That's the way you decline. You don't say no. You say no, thank you. That's the culture. You don't say, what is it, kosher? What, you even think of giving it to me? That's a ger without a toshav. That's a person who perhaps when he reads the Megillah, he loves the pasuk of but when you get to the psukim in which you see how Mordechai is acclimated into the society, they feel a little uncomfortable in their chair. And vice versa. You have many Jews out there that, you know, feel that you have to acclimate into the society you live in to the extent of everything else is not important. You know the joke. Certain Jews come to Israel and they want to say, how do you say tikkun olam in Hebrew? How do you say tikkun olam in Hebrew? Now, quite frankly, there are Jews out there that unfortunately feel that the most important thing for a Jew is to fit in. Nothing else is important. And because you have to fit in, then sometimes you have to eat non-kosher food, and sometimes you have to say, Mary, you know what? It's very difficult to be the both. And I personally saw an example of a person that was both a proud Jew, but a person that acclimated to the society he was in. Just to give you another example to make it tangible for you. You know, in Canada, it is not customary to be blunt. When you're blunt, you're considered militant, disrespectful. Am I wrong?
You're very sensitive.
Not sensitive. It's just sensitive. The culture. They're not sensitive. As a matter of fact, that's not true. They're not overly sensitive. It's just the way they talk. So for example, you do not say the word, and he taught me this, do not say the word problem. Problem's too big. What do you say?
Issue.
It's a challenge. Now you're saying the same thing, but you know, no big deal. But quite frankly, that changes the whole culture around you, if you think about it. People are not talking in militant terms. There's problems. Everyone's not good. Whatever. If you say challenge, not what, but rather pardon me or pardon, it changes the way people talk and the way that people drive and the way people do things. And when you want to get things done on behalf of the Jewish community, you can't go ahead and think, I'm going to go into my bubble, I'm going to act like an Israeli, or excuse me for saying so for the Canadians listening, like an American, or a Canadian in America, vice versa. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. There are certain rules and regulations that people keep in different cultures. And one of them is that in a place like Canada, you don't say the word problem. Now, when I first heard it, I said, but I'm not Canadian. I can't vote in the elections. But if I want to get anything done here, I have to talk authentic Torah in the language that's understood by the people here. Authentic Torah learning, authentic Judaism, not apologetic Judaism, but in a language that people understand. And just like when you go to Argentina, you would not think of giving a speech in Portuguese because they speak Spanish. So too, when you're in a different country and culture, you have to speak in the way that people understand in that culture. Lo dome, even in English, a speech you give in New York to a speech you give in the UK. The idioms you use are going to be different. People don't understand many of the American idioms that we're used to. And this gentleman was able to be an authentic Jew, fight for what he believed in, and sometimes have enemies and people that didn't agree with him, and yet be able to be part and parcel of the local culture. And I am sure today that as his body's being brought to Israel, there's many eyebrows as being risen in the community. Why is he being brought to Israel? It's very rare in such a community for anyone to be buried in Israel. He's being brought to Israel. That's a very Jewish statement of who he was and where his heart was. And on the other hand, I am positive that there are many Haligonians. That is a term I learned when I went to Halifax. People that live in Halifax are called Haligonians. Don't ask me how that translates back to the word Halifax. There are many Haligonians today that are mourning for the loss of this gentleman, not just in the Jewish community, which is a huge loss for, but in the non-Jewish community as well, which he was part and parcel of. When I went into his office, he had pictures of himself at Jewish events and pictures of himself at basketball events that many of his fellow friends and workers went to. And his heart, thank God, was in both. And he was able to combine both. Is it easy? No. Are there sometimes clashes? Absolutely. But when we read the Megillah, we do both. We speak about the Jewish parts, Ish Yehudi Ayah B'Shushan Abira, La Yehudim Ayta Ora V'Simcha, and we speak about the need to acclimate to the society. And the fact that we put on a pedestal the fact that Mordechai was dressing in the local fashion and that he was an assistant to Achashverosh. Whether we like it or not, perhaps we would have liked it better if he sat in a base medrash.
Well, that's what they say most.
Could be. Could be. But even the Jews that didn't like the fact that he worked for a living have to read that part of the Megillah, whether they like it or not. To make an analogy to what I just said, even the Jews that don't like working for a living have to learn the word, the book of Job. What can you do? It's one of the books in Tanakh. Better to learn it in Hebrew, Iyov. No big deal. But if you learn it in English, it's a problem. It stares you in the face. Every single page on Job 1, Job 2, Job 3. Oops! Yeah, we have to work for a living? Oh, that's a hard one over there.
I think it had to be the fact that he dressed and was very Persian.
He was.
Not the fact that he was.
And yet he was a distinct Jew, to the extent that Haman knew he was Jewish. To the extent that he told off Esther. Esther wanted to just acclimate. And what did he do? Fourth chapter, famous words. Who can ever forget them? Al tadami venafshech li malet bet hamelech mikol ha-yudim. Don't even think, don't even contemplate that you can escape in the palace from all the Jews. Whether you like it or not, you're a Jew and you're different too. You're a resident and you're a visitor. You're a resident and you're a visitor. And that's the way we Jews, in my humble opinion, have to act until such time that we will control the entire world if that time ever comes. But until that time, at this very moment, I believe Avraham Avinu's legacy is the legacy we have to take to heart. Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. I am a visitor amongst you. I'm strange. I'm different. And yet I am a resident. I'm part of you. And if we don't take both to heart, we will not succeed in the big world. And many a times when you see people drift away from Judaism, not all the time, but many times, you will see it always comes down to that issue. They wanted to acclimate and their parents said, absolutely not, we're going to live here like we lived back in the old country, or vice versa. They totally acclimated to their society to the extent of, what do I need any of this baloney, like being a member of a synagogue and going to shul on Yom Kippur and then lighting the Hanukkah menorah, what do I need this all? It's very difficult to have both, and yet it's very necessary and vital to have both. The legacy of Avraham down to the legacy of Yaakov, and I can prove it from the story of Shechem, down to the legacy of Mordechai in Shushan, down to us today. And therefore, I believe that one of the nafkaminas, one of the halachic ramifications of what I said, is those four psukim we read out of the Megillah, two and two, to make it equal. Don't come out of the Megillah saying, you see, they were very Persian. And don't come out of the Megillah saying, see, they were very Jewish. They were both. They were Jewish and they were Persian. They fasted for 3 days, as Jews should do in the time of Tzara. That's the first Rambam in Hilchot Taniyot, in the laws of fasting. He doesn't talk about Tanis Esther. He doesn't talk about Yud Zayin B'Tammuz. He talks about fast days that you do when things are bad, right now, acutely. And on the other hand, they were Persian. Yes?
I'm wondering if when Haman doesn't bow, when everyone bows, Mordechai rather, and there's no halachic problem to such an extent that Chazal say, well, maybe he must have been wearing an idol, because why else would he not do that? But if he didn't bow, perhaps it was a very non-PC thing, like this chassid next to you, who was a little bit rude. By not bowing, when everyone bowed and he could have bowed, it brought about this entire series of events where he's partially responsible for this crisis.
I think you know the big machlokas regarding why he didn't bow and if he did the right thing or the wrong thing. You know that part of Chazal are against him on that and part are for him. Right. And one day it says, well, he had a tzelem on him, he had some sort of an avodah zarah on his neck. And I think that goes exactly to what we were talking about. Was it a political move that he doesn't like the fact that there's one person that everyone bows to, like a do-it-all, he knows it all, that's not good politically? Or was it because he had a very non-Jewish thing on his neck and therefore he didn't bow? And if you look at the debate in Chazal, you can see that coming out. This is exactly the struggle that Chazal struggled with. And that's why I say, I personally don't like Jews that don't struggle with it. I don't like Jews that think there's an easy answer. I like them as human beings, but I don't like their points of view that come out and say, no, we're only Jewish. That's all. There's no other value in my life. I mean, there's no other value in your life. You learn nothing from the world around you. My eyes, these two Agans saw, when I was in traffic in New York, when I was coming towards the Williamsburg, on the bridge that goes to the overpass of the highway, I saw Hasidim reading the Daily News. When I was growing up in America, I was told not to read the Daily News, and I even call it that name. You know what you should call the Daily News? The Daily Znus, thank you. Daily Znus. I won't translate. And there they are, reading the Daily News. Hasidim in the full garb reading the Daily News. Ger v'toshav. Don't tell me they were reading the Jewish column. They were reading the Daily News, the members and citizens of New York. So quite frankly, I personally don't like that opinion that comes along and says, we're only Jews. We're not only Jews, we have other values. And I don't like the other opinion that says, no, we're like everyone else. We're not like everyone else. It's very difficult when you have to define a Jew. Avraham Avinu struggled, found that golden term, Ger V'toshav. Go ahead and try to find that golden term and that golden path in your lives. It's very difficult and challenging. As a matter of fact, every single day. Every single day. It's challenging and it's difficult. Everyone's cursing in the office and you were taught nibul peh, terrible thing to do. Try to stop yourself. And everyone's going to look at you. Try to stop yourself. Everyone's going to look at you. Try to go ahead on Friday and explain to your fellow workers, listen, I can't come to the bar tonight because it's our Sabbath and I'll be sitting with my wife and my family. Let's think about it. They're going to the bar, having a good time, and you have to go home to your wife and your family. Oh, we feel so, we respect you so greatly. Let's be honest, they respect you. They laugh at you sometimes. That's a price of being a Jew. And on the other hand, you're part and parcel of the society you're in. You don't come to work wearing certain things, and you don't come in to a meeting saying certain Jewish idioms. You go ahead and you do business and you talk the talk that is there. And when you want to be a Jewish leader in any country, and this is what I teach my students to this day, you have to teach authentic Torah, not apologetic Torah, and yet do it within the culture that you live. Just to give one example, which is amongst many examples, what do you do in a situation where someone, you teach about Shalach Manos and someone says, well, does it have to be kosher?
Good point.
I leave you, it's a very big challenge. The answer is very simple, halachically. Of course it has to be kosher. How do you answer? If you're a ger toshav, that answer is going to have to be tailored, thought about, the way you're going to phrase it and do it. That's something that sometimes we Jews, living amongst Jews, don't think about too much, because within the family, you know, we can say what we want. But it's very important to keep the balance. Yes, Bruce.
Our last speaker has commented that when he was in the Navy, a parent today, when they made big barbecues and invited to visit their sons, happened to phone Shvas for Tammuz. And everyone's enjoying themselves. And he and the very small group of
religious
in Israel are fasting. Yeah. And he's wondering, maybe they have it right. Maybe there's, because there's a Rebbe of Zachariah where they asked, should they be fasting? And they had asked themselves, maybe they have it right. They were there in the IDF, and here we are. And there's a question then, should we fasting? And these people seem to, they ask the question, but they're not.
Okay.
So he continued fast, but he wondered.
Why is that connected to what we said today?
Or because here he had to show that he's a Jew.
Okay.
He's not fasting.
Confronted
with the dilemma.
Now I understand. I'll tell you honestly, that's not necessarily within the debate that we're dealing with. There's no dilemma. He has to fast. The question is, do we have to fast today with the state of Israel and an army? That's a very big, loaded halakhic question. On Shiva Sabbatamus.
He separated himself in the tent, he lied down, it was a hot day, not participating, and they're all laughing.
I'm sure.
And they're wondering.
I'm sure, and that's a price you pay. But it is a very legitimate halakhic question. Do you fast when there's a state of Israel and we're living here? That's a very big halakhic question. You see what we do. And that maybe answers your question, but it's a halachic question. I can go on for at least 2 hours giving points of view, lechan ulechan, on this side, on that side. If there's a state of Israel, and there's a Jewish army, and there's Jewish sovereignty, and most of the biblical land of Israel, do you have to fast on Shiva Esrei B'Tammuz, on Yud B'Teves, and on Tzom Gedalia? Tisha B'Av, the Gemara already says it's different. But those three fast days is a question. My answer at the end of the whole debate is, yes, we do. But it's not a simple answer, of course. A Jew living in a Jewish world doesn't look at the world around him would say, of course, what changed? Nothing changed. Everything's the same. What, nothing changed? Everything's the same? What, are you living in dreamy land? You're living in fantasy land? Nothing's changed in the state of Israel, in the land of Israel, whatever you want to call it? Of course things have changed. On the other hand, it has not yet changed totally to where we want to get to. So therefore, it's a big halacha question. Now, as to that soldier, I feel terrible, but I can just tell you that the IDF has changed so much since those times, and I think that even though there's attempts this way or that way, there are so many religious soldiers today in the IDF that I believe it would be inappropriate and already put somewhere in some memo that on this and this day you can't do it because it's a fast day.
This was the Navy, so he
okay.
told them.
Everything takes time.
The acronym was, that's your problem.
You didn't build, what's the old saying, you didn't build in one day? You didn't be Rome in a day. You cannot go ahead and make the whole IDF totally with a Jewish identity. For every last halacha. It takes time, but Baruch Hashem, there's an Erev on every base, and there's kosher food, and there's glad kosher, as a matter of fact, because of the Sephardim. And there is absolute Shabbos and Kashrus, and I'm sure Tisha B'Av. And the fast days, I don't think when I came into the army anyone knew what the minor fast days were. Today, many do. Non-religious soldiers, they know what it is. Because of all the influx of religious soldiers in the army. So the army, thank God, has changed, I think. A lot, yes, has to be done, but the army has changed.
I went to a school in St. Louis, Missouri, graduate school, had a lot of religious Christians there.
Where?
Outside of St. Louis. When they heard that I had even a minor fast day, they changed the entire program to accommodate the one guy.
Very nice.
And here it's embarrassing to think that the Navy, when they hear that there's a fast day, the rabbis, well, that's your problem.
Yeah.
instead of changing the
to list the Malamed Tzchut on the Navy SEALs, I would say that when you're amongst family, you allow yourself to do things that are diplomatically incorrect so you can laugh at your brother and sister, and since we're all brothers and sisters, maybe that's why they laughed at him. I don't justify it.
That's unusual, because my first teaching job in university was at a Catholic school. I couldn't get a job in another school. I got hired by St. Francis.
Yeah. Did you start out in the middle seat, or did you switch?
Pardon?
Did you start out in the middle seat, or did you switch?
Didn't have to switch. I was in the middle seat. My wife wanted the window. I was in the middle seat.
So if she would have been in the middle, and he would have demanded, did you switch?
Oh, that would be fun.
That was a follow-up question.
That would be fun.
Is that part of Join the Modern World, or is that?
No. Once the person tried that on me, and I was a very nice guy to accommodate him, and then I told him off. It was very fun. But I told him off in a very nice way, I believe, and he could not prove to me why it's usher to sit next to a woman on the plane, other than saying that's what we do. Which is fine! That's what you do. And he was polite, and I said, fine, no problem. But I wanted to, but I said, you could, in my humble opinion, you could say that's what we do. Do never said it, never ever say it in the name of the Torah.
Right.
That he had a problem with, I said, show me where.
You could just say he's on
Fakasha. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think I told you, I spent about 6 months going back and forth because we lived in Truro.
Yeah.
Right. So it was down in Halifax.
Truro's near Halifax.
100%. No exaggeration, no less, no more. Your dynamics. So you talked about the in Halifax, and I suspect of a lot of small towns in that respect. 100%. 100% of that. The other thing is that this particular person in Canadian Jewry, not just in Halifax, he's really. He was a center figure.
He was.
Certainly in Halifax, but also in other
places. He was. We'll be dealing with